The mind, which time has slowly dug beneath familiar objects, has sprung in an instant. And what was rock before becomes but sand and dust. Charles Dickinson. Welcome to this week's episode of Warfare, Advancement, Revisionism. My name is Preston Floyd, and as always, I'm your host. I'd like to thank everyone joining me this week. I appreciate it. If you're a newcomer, welcome. I hope you will enjoy and peruse our backlog of episodes. And if you're a returning listener, thank you guys, as always, for your continued support. It means a lot. This week, we will be covering southern France and parts of the Iberian Peninsula, basically post-Cardium ware or Cardial ware culture, which is about 5,500 to about 4,000 BC, BCE, whichever of those you prefer. Also want to go ahead and apologize. I'm a little stopped up. It's getting very cold where I am tonight. It's about 33 degrees Fahrenheit, and it's going to get much colder this evening. So I'm getting a little sick because of that, I think. The weather changing back and forth for me always causes stuffiness and sniffles and that kind of stuff. So apologies. I'm going to try and clear up the audio as best I can, but if I do sound a little sick, sorry. Now, when we're talking about Neolithic cultures in southern France, there is some overlap to parts of the very northwest of Italy, as well as parts of what is now Switzerland. So some of this will cover those areas as well, and I may not do the best job of always pointing out when that is the case, but I am going to try and point those out when I can, and I'm going to do my best to remember that. When we get into when we get to Iberia, this is also going to cover kind of the eastern seaboard of what is now Spain, as well as the southern coast of Spain as well, Andalusia and Valencia, those areas. Now, it's important to point this out right at the start. How much of the population is Neolithic is probably proportionally very small. There are still holdovers from the Mesolithic and Paleolithic period in France, old school hunter-gatherers, and there are probably far more of them in the area than there are Neolithic farmers and herders, but again, because of their sedentary nature, their sites and artifacts tend to show up a little bit better in the historical record, or in the archaeological record, I should say. Also, this is something we touched on last season, but there is a question if how much of a continuity between the Paleolithic and the Mesolithic people there was in these regions. Obviously, there's a very long history of art and artifacts from hunter-gatherers prior to this period in these regions. And that continues into the Mesolithic period, but there is some question if these are newcomers or if this was a completely homegrown phenomena of the transition between the Paleolithic to the Mesolithic. Did the Mesolithic, kind of the changes happening, due solely to local developments, or were they influenced by other peoples coming from other parts of Europe and then later early arrivers of Neolithic cultures or early settlers from Neolithic societies. This is something that's heavily debated still today. And unfortunately, DNA evidence hasn't really been able to answer this conclusively. We can tell, obviously, that, Anatolian farmers or people descended from Anatolian farmers do show up in southern France during the period we're talking about and prior. But the question is, are they bringing in, other Mesolithic European DNA with them from people they had already mixed with? Or did the Mesolithic hunter-gatherers move in and begin to integrate the older Paleolithic groups, and then those mixtures mixed with the Anatolian descended individuals? So it's kind of a, what came first, and who came when, I guess, for lack of a better explanation. So I hope that's clear. I know that's a little confusing. I'm trying to figure out a better way to word it, but unfortunately, I'm struggling right now. I am, again, a little sick. Also, while the cardinal wear culture does disappear around 5,500, you still have the linear pottery culture, who, you know, we still have to get into their final disappearance. But they do have, you know, sites that are right on the border of these people who are remaining after the cardinal wear culture falls apart. Remember, the LBK lasts about 4,500, especially in the West. They last a little bit longer. So they are beginning to exert influence on these Neolithic farmers living along the coasts where the cardinal wear peoples had first colonized. So you have that continued influence. As well as, of course, local developments and local hunter-gatherers, as well as, you know, trade links to the Italian cultures we discussed the last couple of weeks. So while the Neolithic, you know, agriculture herding population may not be very large, of course, at least initially, that is something that's going to, of course, continue growing. And they're going to be continually influenced by these other Neolithic cultures to their northwest and to their southwest in Italy and those regions, as well as what is now Germany and northern France and the lowlands. Not to mention other material cultures that are native to France that we'll be discussing probably next week, those in Brittany as well as what is now Normandy. Now, despite, you know, again, what I said about the population not being very dense for the Neolithic groups bringing in agriculture and herding, you know, they don't have kind of the same issues that the peoples living in Italy do. They are, of course, are mountains nearby to the, to, you know, in the area. Of course, there's the western edge of the Alps. You have the Cévennes Mountains in southern France. But there are two very significant rivers that, you know, they can travel up and begin populating along there. There's the Rhône as well as the Garonne River. And those are two, you know, vital passageways for these Neolithic groups moving upriver into what is now southern France. And there's a lot of flatlands once you get past the mountains, especially in past the Cévennes Mountains, which are not a huge range. Even in those mountainous territories, you know, there's a lot of good areas for goats and sheep. Not to mention, of course, cattle. Cattle would be just fine there too, especially kind of in the hilly country as well. So, you know, it's a great area for agriculture, even into, you know, you know, modern day, there's still a lot of farmland in that part of France. And it would be, you know, perfect territory for expanding Neolithic farmers. But that's not to say, of course, that, you know, hunting and gathering was still not viable in the region. It very much was. There are some sites in southern France that show that, you know, they may have been dual occupied by people that are hunter-gatherers or agriculturalists, and, you know, they may have lived side by side. There are still, of course, wild aurochs. You have red deer, roe deer, still kind of, you know, in the more wooded areas around those mountains and hills. And, you know, at all these sites, there is, you know, evidence that, you know, there is a mix of domesticated and non-domesticated animals. And that's not true of just the agriculturalists. That's also the case of people that we would consider hunter-gatherers. So either they are preying upon their agricultural neighbors, you know, food supply in terms of their domesticated animals, or they're trading. They might be trading byproducts from what they were hunting and fishing with the agriculturalists. There could have been an overlap. And there's probably a bit of both, to be quite honest. There's probably, you know, predation on one side, as well as trade, between the people as well. And it does look like the plants are kind of slow. There's not as wide variety of crops in southern France that you see in, say, Italy. And that's true also of sites in Switzerland. The earliest domesticated crops that they've found in Switzerland is flax seeds, which, you know, there is no wild flax in Central Europe. So this is definitely being imported. And there's no real evidence of, other domesticated plants showing up until about 6,100. And after that point, you know, you begin to see more of that come into the area. And that may have to do with the mountains, but I'm not 100% sure. But you also do begin to see pottery show up after 5,400 in Switzerland. There is no pottery prior to that. So the people bringing in ceramics to Switzerland are not from, at least they don't appear to be from southern France. They have a lot of the linear pottery culture type artifacts coming in. So the people in southern France, they are basically just making pottery for their own personal use. They don't appear to be trading too much of their own pottery outside of their sites. It seems to be local, contained locally. And they're obtaining linear pottery from the sites to the north. That kind of shows that their own style of pottery isn't quite as developed as, say, places to the north and to the east. And it's really hard to find definitive pictures of the pottery from this region. It's all handmade. There's no pottery wheel in this area, at least during this period of the season. It's well made, but it kind of lacks anything that makes it stand out. So what are they trading for the more developed pottery? Probably, fruits of the land, local things that you could not find, or at least you couldn't find as abundant amount in places like Italy. They're probably, of course, trading antlers, leathers, things like that. Not that, the people in Italy did not have access to those type of things. They did, but, more is always better, at least for most people, especially at this period of time. You could probably never have too much of any one good because you never know how long that access will last. And of course, again, you are close to the Cévennes Mountains as well as the Alps. So there's a lot of good, stone that you could trade as well. Which again, any type of stone is useful for Neolithic peoples as well as, prior Mesolithic and Paleolithic peoples as well. And again, this is one of those areas where you do see obsidian arriving from places like Sardinia, as well as kind of the central part of Italy, those sites that we talked about the last couple of weeks. But back to the pottery in southern France. Now, as I said, most of it is fairly, bare bones. It's mostly brown or gray ware, though there have been some sherds found with some decoration, nothing too elaborate. They do kind of continue the kind of the impression techniques that the cardial ware culture does in some situations. But these are, usually just smaller stones or things like that that they're impressing. So it's more, not so much the heart-shaped shells. It's just more of just simple, stone or wood patterns that they're kind of impressing in there. I did find some pictures, so I'll include those on the YouTube episode as well. But surprisingly, there's not like really a name for this part of the Neolithic in France. There are Neolithic cultures in France, of course, but they're mostly associated with sites to the north as well as in the Brittany Peninsula, which we'll discuss those probably next week or the week after. Now, we will be moving into Spain. However, apologies for the quick cut there. I had a very bad sneezing and coughing fit. So yeah, we're going to be moving into Spain or Iberia next. Before that, though, I did want to go ahead and cover the Balearic Islands. Now, interestingly enough, apparently these were not occupied during this season, but they're always included with the range of the cardial wear culture. So I'm going to assume that, you know, the cardial wear peoples did visit these islands, but did not establish permanent settlements there. They will not be permanently occupied until around 3000 BC, I think, is the current date, or at least sometime between 3000 and 2500, I believe, is the dates that I saw. But it's very possible that they were visited at least temporarily by the cardial wear cultures. And these are, you know, four islands, you know, right off of Spain's, well, it's more than four, but there are four main ones: Mallorca, Menorca, Ibiza, and Formentera. And we'll talk about them in more in depth when people actually occupy them. So, not part of this season's sites to go over. And I'm only bringing them up because I know people are going to ask. And also, I believe I mentioned them as cardial wear sites when we were going over the cardial wear initially. But apparently, if they did visit there, they were not permanent settlements. And I just wanted to make that clear. Now, though, we are going to be moving south of where we're talking about, past the Pyrenees Mountains. And we're going to be moving into what is the modern region of Catalonia, which is a part of Spain, despite some Catalonian protests. There are very similar kind of situation to what you see in southern France during this period. Very small, close-knit agricultural communities butting right up against older Mesolithic and Paleolithic remnants of hunter-gatherers. And the pottery is very simplistic when you see it. Very straightforward, not a whole lot of decoration, just very, you know, just made for everyday use. Nothing really stands out about it, unfortunately. However, there are a couple of sites where there is evidence of, if not cultural continuity, but maybe evidence of maybe cultural absorption at several sites where it shows that maybe Neolithic hunter-gatherer locations are being taken over, or maybe the Neolithic hunter-gatherers are being absorbed by the farming groups moving in. And one of those sites is Roca de los Moros, or the Caves of El Cogol. Now, this site, again, had been used by earlier Neolithic peoples, or excuse me, earlier Mesolithic, Paleolithic peoples. There's a lot of rock art of people dancing, as well as being surrounded by animals. Now, the art, what these depict, is sometimes debated. It's a question of if these are men and women, or just women, or, you know, there are black figures mixed with red figures, and there are various interpretations of this. There are several places along the Mediterranean, not just in Europe, where female figures are typically depicted with lighter skin than the males. You see this in Egyptian art. You see this in Minoan art. So, but typically these are settled agricultural societies, not something you would kind of associate with hunter-gatherers. Now, this is the type of art being created by hunter-gatherers. Well, starting around 5000 BC, this traditional hunter-gatherer art is no longer painted at these various sites along the eastern stretch of the Iberian Peninsula. What it is replaced by is referred to as Iberian schematic art. And this is filled with figures that are more abstract, I guess you'd call it. Typically all in red. There's very little black figures. It's mostly like a red ochre type. But they're not, you know, painting over these older versions. They're just adding on these more abstract pieces. And I'll include photos of both. But I also recommend going to the website because they do have virtual tours. They're very interesting. So that is something that, you know, is a cultural, like I said, not necessarily a continuation, but kind of a cultural absorption or replacement that you can kind of see in the region. And it shows up a lot, you know, it's a much sharper example, I guess, of how these cultures are evolving as opposed to, you know, the slow replacement of, you know, wild animal bones with domesticated animal bones and, you know, the slow appearance of various types of pottery. It's something that really stands out in kind of the record. But again, this transition starts to take place around 5000 BC, and these sites will continually be used by, you know, these Neolithic farmers until, I believe, around, I think it's around 2000 BC. I forgot to write the end date down, but it's quite a while. It's essentially 5,000 years of, you know, continual use by hunter-gatherers and agriculturalists. Now, the pottery being used by these people is, again, very similar to what you would see in southern France, and they do continue the impression patterns that you would have seen the cardioware culture used. However, there is another type of pottery that begins to be used. It looks like it starts in southern Spain, again, in what is now Andalusia. And this is known as La Almagra pottery. And this red ochre culture is another term for it. And this begins to work its way up the coasts of Spain in both east and west, or Iberia, the entire peninsula. And as you might guess from the name, most of the pottery is red, though there are some that is kind of a darker brown shade as well, though that could just, again, be like a, you know, a wear issue, you know, it being exposed to certain elements and darkening over time. Now, this color, along with the different shapes you'll see at the descendants of the cardioware culture, has led some to believe that the Almagra people were actually coming up from a different location, possibly North Africa. You know, the reason for this is, you know, the Neolithic has spread along the African coast along this period. And it's possible that people were kind of sailing. And with the, you know, combine this with the desertification of kind of the northern part of Africa, it could have led, you know, a sizable migration of people out of the region. Unfortunately, because of the desertification, there's really not been a large-scale archaeological survey in that region dating this far back. So there's no real evidence connecting the two yet, though I do think that this is one of those areas that, you know, as time goes on, there will be more definitive evidence one way or the other. Now, eventually, the Almagra pottery will begin to adopt some of the impressions that you see in the descendants of the cardioware cultures. There's a lot of white lines, you know, very thin white lines, kind of abstract figures and paintings, and you'll see that when I post the pictures of that too. So there is kind of a mixing of this La Almagra style with the remnants of the cardioware culture. Now, another kind of difference between other Neolithic sites, and these early Neolithic sites in Spain, or Iberia, I should say. I keep doing that. It's the entire peninsula, not just Spain. There is less evidence of domesticated animals. At this date, there's very little sheep, goats, cattle, anything like that. There is evidence of pigs and rabbits, though, again, because of the differences between early domesticated strains and wild animals, it's hard to tell for sure if these are domesticated pigs or domesticated rabbits. We don't know, sadly. However, olives are a huge part of the diet in the region. That's one of the big amounts of food that they found are olives, in addition to, you know, domesticated sources of grains and things like that. Though, again, are these domesticated olive trees or are these wild olives? It's hard to say, unfortunately, at this early date. However, olives are grown in Spain later, and these are domesticated, so it's possible that, you know, this is a homegrown domestication, or it's a mix of domesticated and wild strains of olives. We don't know. But, yeah, so that's another big difference between Neolithic sites in Spain and the rest of Europe. Now, I should point out that this type of pottery was actually, when it was initially found, there were all sorts of wild theories that it could possibly come directly from the Near East, places like Anatolia, maybe Syria, Ugarit, Cyprus, places like that. And then there are some thoughts that may have come from the island of Lipari, which we discussed a couple of weeks ago. However, with the advent of radiocarbon dates, you know, this art style is shown to have occurred, you know, 3,000 years before these supposed prototypes came from the eastern side of the Mediterranean. So this is probably just a case of, you know, styles just happening to, you know, resemble each other. So it does appear that the Almagra style is a local invention, or at least semi-local if they did indeed come from North Africa, which, again, no real evidence of that just yet. Now, as mentioned before, the La Almagra style spreads up the coast of Iberia, both the eastern and western coasts. And when they get to what is now, I believe, southern Portugal, another development kind of comes about. And this shows a kind of a cultural slash spiritual development. And these are the emergence of dolmen tombs, also known as portal tombs. And this is a type of tomb that you see in a lot of different places in the world. But so far, the oldest that have been discovered, at least that can be dated, do date to this area of Iberia. And there are other nearby cultures in Europe that do adopt the dolmen. Now, is this because of influence from the La Almagra culture, or is this just a type of development that you see just naturally occur among different peoples for various reasons? Unfortunately, we'll never know for sure, but there are trade links between the La Almagra and some of the cultures further to the north, specifically Brittany, but we'll talk more about that when we get to the Neolithic cultures of Brittany, and that'll probably be in the next week or two. So, make of that what you will. Now, I should point out that all these tombs are created with megalithic stones for the most part, though how they're constructed and how they look do vary from area to area. They don't all, even if a tomb is a dolmen, does not mean that they are one-to-one copies everywhere else. And we'll talk about the differences between the various styles when we get to those places and when they begin to emerge. But that's something I think I'm going to hold off for the La Almagra and the other cultures in Western Europe that are using them. I think I'll kind of include that in that episode next week, where we'll compare and contrast how they're constructed and what they look like. But I think that will do it for this week. Unfortunately, again, there's not a whole lot to go into in specifics, you know, in terms of material cultures in France. They don't really have a kind of an umbrella name for all of it. They're just kind of remnants of the cardial wear culture for the most part. Though, again, they do have ties to these other cultures that we've discussed and will be discussing over the next couple of weeks. But if you guys have any specific questions, comments, constructive criticism, please do let me know. I'd be happy to hear from you. You can reach me via email at waradrevpod@gmail.com. You can also send me a direct message on X/Twitter. And you can also see me on YouTube. You can comment there and I will respond as best I can, as soon as I can. And I also live stream on YouTube and over on Twitch on occasion. Most days during the week, though, sometimes on the weekends as well. We've got a busy couple of weeks coming up with Christmas right around the corner. There will be an episode out regularly next week. And then I'm still debating, you know, when that week break will be. But I do plan on taking a week off either for Christmas or New Year's. But I'll try to let you guys know as best I can when that's going to take place, just so you're not waiting around for an episode that will not come. But again, apologies if I sounded a little rough. I am a little under the weather right now, but we will recover. I really don't feel all that bad. I'm just kind of stopped up. So I have cut out most of my coughs and clearing of the throat, I believe. But apologies if those do get in there. But I hope you all have a good rest of your day and week from whenever you listen to this. And we will see you all next time. Peace.